Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Okay. Today, and we have our morning routine here. Okay. So as we continue, well, in today's podcast, Lisa, jump off is 40 acres in a faith-based housing in Looters, Texas. Now, I guess this all started up an hour, about 90 minutes ago. I didn't know what we were going to talk about. I figured we might continue on from yesterday. Because we were talking about the debt ceiling yesterday and all that, and we'll get back to that eventually. I mean, that wasn't a planned topic, but it was a good topic. But then somebody sent me a video about a town in Texas called Looters, Texas. So we're going to talk about Looters, Texas, and then we're going to talk about... That inspired me to think about 40 acres and a mule. And then that also inspired me to think about churches and faith-based organizations. So I'm trying to get organized here. So with that said, I came up with 40 acres and a faith-based housing in Looters, Texas. And mind you, I'm going to try to sneak at least Airbnb into this also, because you can even connect Airbnb into this. So well, as I'm rifling through my audio files here, because I'm trying to get back on track for, let's see, okay. I'm morning motivation. I know about you guys, but I need it. Maybe some of you need it too. Okay, wait a minute. We're almost there. Okay, here we go. So, like I said, after this and maybe a couple of, you know, our morning motivational stuff, we'll get to 40 acres in faith-based housing in Lutis, Texas. But it doesn't have to be Lutis, Texas. We're going to read about Lutis, Texas, but it can be anyway. All right, on that note, Steve Harvey.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. but I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off, things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. There were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious. to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection, but he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, so today I came up with, I got to make this title work, 40 acres in faith-based housing in Looters, Texas. But it doesn't have to be Looters, it could be any place. And before I go into Looters, Texas, before people a day ago, I didn't even know what Looters, Texas was. But anyway, 813, I believe. Robin, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. Well, there's no echo here of feedback. So, Robin, well, first thing, how are you doing?
I'm doing great in the Pacific Northwest with the birds chirping and everything.
That's right. It's 7:47 where you are, and 10:47 or 10:48 now a.m. where I'm at, so... We're at like sort of, well, not polar opposites, but I'm on one East Coast. You're on in the Pacific Northwest.
So, yeah, technology, the greater exploit.
Yes, yes. So let's go to what, because like 2 hours ago, I thought I knew what we were going to talk about, but we might drift back to that. But I didn't have a title. Typically when I have a title, I might go with trending topics or something like that. But anyway, so I was reading a text that somebody sent me yesterday. And the text was about a town in Texas called Looters, Texas. That's spelled L-U-E-D-E-R-S, L-U-E-D-E-R-S, Looters, Texas. So I watched the video link that they sent me, and let's read about Looters. Looters is a city in Jones and Shackelford counties in the United States state of Texas, and Texas has got like over 200 counties. The population of Looters is 346 people. At the 210 census, the portion of Looters located in Jones County and part of the Abilene, Texas metro area. The demographics, Well, demographically, 203 people are white. There's one Asian that lives in town. There's 16 mixed or multiracial people in town. 16, that is. Accounting for 6.2% of the town population. There are 38 Hispanic and or Latino people in town, which is 14.73% of the population, for the total of 258 people living in the town. So, and then the video, you know, they're driving around town. The education, and this is according to Wikipedia, Lutis has its own schools until 1967 when they merged with Africa to form the Lutis Africa Independent School District. And now everybody calls me while I'm on the air. Okay, I'm going to have to call them later. So as I was watching the video, you know, what the Lutis, Texas, represents, in my opinion, the real United States of America. In my opinion, they're calling again. Okay, let me. All right. Don't go to New York, Chicago, L.A., Miami, you know, the big towns. Go to places like Lutis where you can, and of course, the American culture is so diverse. Places like Lutis, and they're calling back again for the third time. I'm going to just have to let them ring out until the voicemail picks up, hopefully quickly. But in any event, I was thinking, you know what? And this, and like I said, one of our listeners, a friend of mine from college, sent me the video. And he told me about a church in Texas. This Church Under the Bridge. Yeah, Church Under the Bridge. And where the pastor, or the church, rather, they go to a bridge and they set up a church right under a bridge and they hold a church service there. Then after the church service is, you know, with the choir and the whole nine yards, the preaching and all that. And then after the church service is over, you know, they pack up their equipment and put it back in the vans or cars or whatever they came up in. And then go back, you know, to home base or whatever. So, you know, that the video sparked me thinking about that. And then I was thinking about, we had Pastor Slade on here from El Cajon, California. And he has a little church, and they had some, you know, some spare land where they set up six tiny houses. And then for some reason I thought about military deployment. And so I said, you know what? And I called a couple of people. And one's Robin, who's on the phone now, in the studio now. So I said, you know what? And I thought about a friend of mine. I speak to him about, he's a landlord. He was on here last Friday, Conrad. And I thought about, you know what? What if a church or a faith-based organization, or it doesn't even have to be faith-based, it could be a community-based organization, set up housing communities, affordable housing communities, just like the military does. So anyway, that's why I came up with today's jumbled up topic. Anyway, but it all started with Lutis, Texas. There's a lot of Lutis, Texas. I mean, 86% of the population lives in towns that have like 5,000 or less people. I don't know what the statistic is on towns that have like maybe less than 1,000 people, but there's a lot of them. There's more Lutis, Texas, than there are New York cities or Chicago's or what have you. So it's a huge market. And And a lot of times these towns are in striking distance. Well, we're talking about 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes, in some cases an hour, away from an area, a town, a larger town that has a homeless situation or crisis going on. So now, with all that said, that's how I came up with today's site. So, Robin, you still there? Okay, she might have disappeared.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Robin, you were in the military. Explain to us, what is a deployment or military deployment? Because you were in the Air Force.
Yeah, a deployment is like a real intensive assignment, if you will, where you pack up the whole unit, whatever that unit consists of. Okay, you pack it all up and you transport it, then you unpack it and you set it up. Yes. And I had to specialize in rapid deployment. But it's basically an assignment, if you will, where you take everything that you, everything, and it's all self-contained through the whole process. And it's sustaining as well. So, like, for example, when we did a military deployment, we would have all of our supplies and equipment, right? And we would take those and pack them up in crates and whatever, and put those and the trucks, everything, on the planes, and the planes would fly them overseas, and we would roll everything out, right? Unbox everything, unpack anything. We'd have our transportation because we've shipped it over there with us, right? And then we put up our tents, and then in all of those tents, we put up our sleeping cots, our food, and then our equipment to do our jobs, like the comm center or the chow hall. Or does that make sense?
Now, these would be initially set up as tents.
That's what we did in the unit that I was assigned to was a combat communications group, and we set up the communications.
Right.
My group set up the communications in Saudi Arabia. Okay, before it became Desert Storm, it was Exercise Desert Shield. Okay, and we went in there and unboxed everything, unpacked everything, put up tents, okay? And then now they've got buildings and stuff like that there, but before that happened, we went in there and set that up and established communications on the ground, just like that. And then so you can do that with housing. You can go in with building your tiny houses, right? You get a crew of people because we figured out how many houses can we build in a day in 2 4-hour shifts. Well, we would have the orientation and then in the morning and then in the afternoon build. But you go in and you do that, boom. So you could have people, you could turn around for housing technically in 24 hours. Someone could be moving into their spot.
Now, Hold on. Now, let me play this one audio, and I'm going to come right back to you.
Five years ago, this was a vast checkerboard of potato farms on New York's Long Island. Today, a community of 60,000 persons living in 15,000 homes, all built by one firm. This is Levittown, one of the most remarkable housing developments ever conceived. The idea that came to a man named Bill Levitt was this. Why not apply to the building of houses the same principles that have brought other American industries to their unexcelled peaks of efficiency and service? Why not mass produce the elements that go to make up a house, just as the auto industry does with the parts that go into a new car? Bill Levitt had some other ideas. Put kitchen and bathroom back to back and let them share the same plumbing. Let your plumbers do their work without interruption and without waiting for the carpenter or the bricklayer to get out of the way. Pre-cut your lumber so it's all ready to be assembled into the frame of a house. With the waste removed, one truck can deliver to the building site all the rough lumber that will go into two complete Levitt homes. It's really a matter of organization and planning, getting rid of waste motion. When the foundation is ready, coils for the radiant heating are there. Not a day too soon or a day too late. Without delay, the steam fitters finish their work and move on to the next house, and right behind them come the masons to lay the underflooring. Power-driven trowels make the job a lot easier and faster. Levittown houses are not prefabricated. Prefabrication means a factory operation in which large quantities of materials are kept moving to the workers. Here, the opposite is true. The construction crews are moved to a waiting line of materials. This sort of organization and efficiency is all important in the vast defense housing program. That's the next order of business for the nation's home builders. The architecture of the houses in Levittown is varied enough to eliminate dreary monotony, while at the same time enough alike to permit the savings that result from standardization. Many housing projects are a sea of mud when it rains, but not this one. A wide range of color schemes also brings variety. So here's the home that cost its happy owners just $9,000. And that includes such extras as a completely equipped kitchen, a two-way fireplace, a finished room in the attic, and even a washing machine. The living room. Levittown is a community of young people, and that means a great need for schools. Space has been set aside for plenty of them. Dotted here and there throughout the huge area are shopping centers where every type of product or service is readily available. Shoe stores, five and dimes, department stores, supermarkets, and banks. In addition, there are other facilities designed to draw residents together to help make them feel they are part of a real community. Recreation centers with provisions for filling leisure hours, summer or winter. Yes, that old potato patch has come to a good end.
All right, Bill Levitt was in the Navy. And the Navy has a unit called the Seabees. And the Seabees, essentially, they're the construction unit. But what they do is, like, for instance, they build bridges and infrastructures and roads. Let's say somebody built... They can build a bridge, somebody blows up the bridge, and then the Seabees, they'll go in after that bridge is blown up and rebuild the bridge. They do stuff like that. But Bill, now I don't know if Bill Levitt was in that part of the Navy, but he learned the basic technique of rapid deployment, particularly what Robin's talking about. Let me open up Robin's mic again. He took that idea and brought it back to his firm. And his firm was just him, his brother, and his dad. You know, that was Leavitt Construction. But he took the concept of rapid deployment, which Robin was explaining, and he became known as the Henry Ford of housing. You know, back when when the firm was doing it. I mean, he would set up a whole. They would do 30 or 40 houses a day. And not talking about tiny houses. You know, we're talking about suburban, 1,000-plus square foot homes a day. No off-the-grid stuff, all grid-connected, 30 to 4 houses in a day. And that's based on, you know, what he learned in the military. So I thought about Robin, called Beasley, and then I'm opening up Reba's mic because Reba had somebody on last week. I think his name's Brother Saron. I think he was in the Navy, and he mentioned that he was in the Navy. So as I was watching this video that a friend of mine, like I said, a college buddy, sent me about Looters, Texas, I said, you know what? A lot of these churches, because they, you know, that have people that pastor, I can't pay the rent, pastor, they're about to foreclose on me, pastor, the lights went out. And they have, I mean, Catholic Charities, and people going to Catholic Charities, people going to the Salvation Army, which the Salvation Army is a church. It has dormitories. But I said, you know what? A little storefront church. Not a mega church, but a little storefront church, you know, they got enough people to go into a town like Looters. They don't have to be, because there's a gazillion, there are more towns in the United States that have a population of 300 or less people than they are in New York City. They're all over the place. I said, so, you know, if we went in there as a, the deployment model or the business model, because as Robin pointed out, they're self-contained. Everything they need from communication mm-hmm. systems, the whole nine yards, it's self-contained. So, I said, well, let's pull this on social capital. So, Reba, we're going to have to get in touch with Brother Saron like real quick. But we got between him, Robin, and Beasley, because Beasley's got experience on two continents with this. And Robin's got, you know, experience with the communications thing. So I don't know. Me and my friend.
And deployment.
Right. Right. And I like it. Everything's self-contained. I mean, and you know what? That like Reba, when she sent me a text, and Reba, you can speak up if you're on there. I'll open up your mic. Like on the TV show, and Robin, you brought this up earlier too, off air. Like on the TV show MASH, I mean, that was a military unit. What was the correct name for that's an acronym for what? Mobile? I forgot what the A stand for. But it was a hospital unit. I mean, they're up there performing surgery.
Medical.
All kinds of injuries.
Something hospital.
Okay, hold on. Let's look it up.
I forget.
Look it up real quick.
I was in the 5th Combat Communications Group. And so MASH was a mobile medical unit,
Mobile Army Surgical Hospitals.
Yep, and I was mobile communications unit. Yep.
So whatever the
goal in communications, medical, surgical, housing, because housing was definitely included in all that. You had to house those people no matter where you deploy them, right?
Right.
So I consider these group of people going, the people that are deploying,
right,
I consider those the true first responders, because you're responding first right before there's a tragedy or something else, hopefully, prayerfully. But you're responding before. You're teaching people, right? You're reaching people, teaching people. They're building, and they're making a transition from your traditional mortgage and rent, if you will. Yeah. You're going to win a Nobel Peace Prize. Somebody's going to get a Nobel Peace Prize out of this. Somebody. I don't know who you, Reba, somebody.
Well, maybe all of us. Because like I say, when you called me this morning, because I hadn't posted the link up yet, because a lot of times I don't post anything up until 30 minutes or even 15 minutes until the thing. And then it might be a trend. I'll just put in trending topics or something like that, and we'll pick up for whatever you guys want to talk about. But then I got to think about, all right, wait a minute. A guy named Willie Hudson, he sent me a link on Looters, Texas. When I read about that, Looters is a little town that has less than 350 people. And then this thing started popping up in my mind. And then when I called you, you did bring up MASH right off the bat. Then Reba, who wasn't even privy to our conversation, she sent a note, just at the start of this podcast about just like, the TV show MASH. And then last week when she had on, I think his name was Brother Siron up in Chicago, he was in the Navy, but he was talking about something efficient that the military people do. And then I called Beasley before the podcast this morning, and then I knew he had been over in Europe, at least Germany, but he's been part of this setup in on two continents, up in Europe as well as up in Asia, Vietnam. And then I Now I thought about Airbnb, because even in Looters, Texas, you can do an Airbnb. But anyway, then I just got to thinking about, it's all the pieces of the puzzle are right here. And like you said, Robin, we can anyway, that's where my mind is right now. But Reba, you there? Oh, matter of fact, I just got a text. Thank you, Willie. Willie Hudson's a college, but we majored, we went to college together at it was called West Texas State University when we went there. Now it's West Texas A&M University. But he just sent me a text. He said the smallest town in Texas. And, okay, here we go. The smallest town in Texas is Las Urbanas, population 2000, the population based on 2010 census is 19 people. It's located southeast of La Mesa, Texas. Let's take a look at Las Urbanas, Texas. All right. Thanks, Willie, for that. All right. Right off the bat, this town is just 54 acres large. It has a population of, well, let's see. It was 22, but anyway, really, you are correct. The population was 19 at the 2010 census. So we can get a town off of just this podcast alone. So anyway, my head's about to explode, so I'm going to shut up.
Deploy. You need to get out and do something. That's what deploy. Action.
Yeah, but we need to. Yeah, exactly. Reba, are you there? Oh, did I open up Reba's mic? I thought I did. Okay. Wait a minute. I thought I opened up her mic. All right. Well, I'm finding my way back because I'm on the phone here. Robin, share with us because you are a communication specialist. Because essentially, you can set up. You have the everything needed with the apps and everything where we can deploy, and I guess the communications would be one of the first things that is that you need to set up. When you set up an offline, on the ground community, so run that down for us.
So was that a – run what down?
In other words, all right, we want to set up I like the way the terminology that you use, the military terms, okay, it's a mission. So let's say we get together, we have a mission, and we want to go out and set up camp or set up just like I interviewed him about about 5 months ago. Freedom Georgia. Okay. They have 19. Well, they have 19 families at the time. So I guess one of the first things you would do is you would set up a, I guess for all practical purposes, the radio system or the communication system for that particular community. That's where I'm going with
this. Yeah, that'd be the first thing, and that's which is easy to do because you have the first thing that I would do is I would put up a radio signal. Why? Because it's two way. So meaning that from the broadcast side, like right now, we are talking live on Blog Talk, but we're also talking live on Vibes Live Radio, right?
Right.
And so through that, we're reaching however many people. And then like the same thing with Blog Talk, it's connected with social media. And we're streaming live on video platforms as well. Mixcloud, Twitch, D-Live, Roku, we're everywhere, right. Okay? And so with the connection with the social media and with the phone number posted, that's really close to real-time communication and you know, right now, two-way communication.
Right. And everybody's got a smartphone. Where they can, because
everything is streamed now. Even telephone calls are streamed.
Got it.
Like I'm talking to you through an app. Why?
Right.
Because my cell phone service, who I will name T-Mobile, wants to charge me a minute because it says that calling Blog Talk is out of panel, meaning that it's a free conference call, and they don't They don't want, see, everyone has to pay for the data now. Ever since they figured out that money could be made by charging for the data. Remember back in the day when we first came on the internet, you never heard of any limits, right? You just broadcast it. You just did whatever, right? Now, no.
Right.
So, yeah, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I would put up the communication, and then there's also the everything is streamed, like I was saying, even the phone calls. And so we have apps that we can communicate, like this. Okay, for example, the app Free Conference Call. Okay, I have it installed on the computer, right? And it's dialed in the Block Talk. And on that same computer is the encoder to the radio station and the TVs,
right?
And all at once, right? And then that same app, Free Conference Call, I'm talking to you on another device through the same app, Free Conference Call, right?
Word.
And people can call in on this number, and it will hold 1,000 people. Booyah! And it's free.
Word.
Zoom, I don't know why Zoom got so popular and Free Conference Call didn't, because Free Conference Call doesn't charge you for what Zoom does, and it does a lot more.
That's the interesting
anyway,
thing about the internet. You know, why something, for instance, Skype was way out before WhatsApp. However, yeah. WhatsApp, I mean, is more, you know what, but Skype, though, is in and out. I've had Skype for a long time. I hardly use it.
Microsoft purchased Skype, and when it was purchased by Microsoft, it their level of interest in it has waned. So that's why you see
right.
it. Uh-huh. Yeah, Skype used
yeah,
to be
I
my
use, Yeah, I'd rather use WhatsApp. WhatsApp and then Facebook. Facebook communication systems are pretty good, too.
Well, I use
Reva, are you?
Because we've got a dial pad. And again, like
yeah.
I said, it you can instantly have people join whatever conversation that you're on, wherever you're at. You can take 1,000 people. So that's more than ample to set up for a community. So when you're
okay,
down
now,
there on the ground and you're setting stuff
mm-hmm.
up, boom, your communication you're going to need, especially when you're mobile deployments. So
now let me ask you
mm-hmm.
this, Robin. All right, now the communication, I imagine that was the nerve center, or I mean, was that like one of the first things set up? With the rapid deployment that you were, when you were involved
it's
with?
It's the very first thing that set up. I have to take a call. I'll call right back in.
Okay, no problem. Reba, are you there? Okay, Reba, your mic. All right, Reba, your mic is open if she might be babysitting or whatever. But anyway, area code 602. Your mic is open.
Hey, good morning, L.A. How you doing today, sir?
Fine, good. Good to hear your voice.
Hey, man, I'm listening to the platform, and I brought a new winning team member in the building. I would like to introduce you to your broadcast listening audience.
Great. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it.
The ball went down.
And speaking of which, now... tell us your program and how we can tune into it.
I'm doing my radio show tonight, and you can call me direct, 602-478-1619, 602-478-1619. We're going to have Winning Team Wednesday. That's where the elite 300 winning team members all get on the radio. They let everybody know about their business, product, service, and brand. And they connect with the people on this network and on other networks. So we're all about connecting the dots. That's why I got Mr. Baldwin here to let you know about what he's doing. Baldwin, you know how to fool. Let the radio world know what you got going on.
Hey, what's going on?
Okay,
man?
Great.
Thank y'all for having me, man. Oh, shout out to Pastor Don, CEO. Shout out to Pastor Don, Junior, CEO, and the Elite 300 winning team members. I'm out of Southwest Atlanta, man. I just want to be a breath of fresh air to the game. Man, I feel like my music and it can really change lives, man. From adults to the youth. I got a single I'm pushing. It's called We Outside. I think everybody can ride to it, man. Old or young, man. I feel like you can relate in some sort of way, man. From whatever perspective you live in your life, you know. And you know, I guess it's just a piece of music I just want to give to the world, man. I got plenty more, man. You know, if the world will have me, man, you know, I'm here to stay, man. If the world has me, then I'm here to stay. I'm just trying to be a voice.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. And now, what part of the country are you, or what world, rather, are you guys in? Where are you?
Yeah, sir, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, Atlanta, Georgia, okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And Pastor,
I'm in Mesa, Arizona.
What, in Arizona?
Mesa, okay. Arizona, yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, Arizona, the northern part of that state, well, we'll cover that topic later. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to get back to Rapid Deployment House.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Texas, thank you, Willie, for that. And I never even heard of Looters, Texas, 24 hours ago. Ibanez, Texas, Willie, thank you again for that. Population of that town, 19. Beasley as well as Robin and Reba, are you there yet? Oh, wait a minute. I got to open up Reba's mind. Okay, Reba, you there? All right, well, long story short, because we're going to have to really organize a lot of this off air so we can sound sane on air, is essentially we're going to organize a mission. We'll just start off with one and then do this stuff, execute these ideas, military style, all right, from people, because I don't have that background like Beasley or Robin or Brother Siron does. So we're going to chit-chat with them offline, plan it out, and you know what? Hopefully by tomorrow morning we'll be further along than we are today. I think we got a lot of the raw materials, but we need to be organized. So I don't know where – all right, Robin had to drop off and do something. Reba, your mic is open, but Reba, she might be doing something. So what we're going to do, I'm going to play a three-minute clip. Wait a minute. Oh, I'm trying to find something. All right, well, put it this way. If you guys got any trending topics or something that you want to talk about, press 1-619-768-2945. I'm looking through my catalog here. Okay, well, Malcolm, we'll do Malcolm Gladwell. See if you guys come up with anything. Malcolm Gladwell, then we'll, matter of fact, the Gladwell piece is a little bit too long. Okay, well, let's do a 2-minute bit. That way people don't get bored.
Be no more sleeping under bridges for some homeless folks in Muncie.
They're now eligible to apply to live in tiny houses that are under construction right now by a Muncie group called Bridges Community Services. And this miniature housing initiative is the first of its kind in the state of Indiana. RTV6's Derek Thomas reports.
The tiny homes began arriving this morning. It would take about a month for the construction work to be completed on them.
By midday, the truck was still unloading the 6 96-square-foot homes and placing them on their foundations. Each home will cost about $3,000.
I would love to be one of the ones playing. I think it would be amazing to live in this right here.
Brandon May has been homeless and unemployed for about 5 months. Later this week, he will get a new job at a factory. He says these humble quarters can help him get back on his feet.
When you first walk in, when you're accustomed to a big house, you know, stuff like that, you might think no, but when you think about the layout and you think about sleeping on a park bench or sleeping underneath a bridge or anything like that, sleeping in someone's car, this is way more than enough room.
The tiny homes will have electricity and heat, but a separate community building will be constructed where this basketball court is that will contain bathroom and shower facilities on one side and a kitchen facility on the other. None of the homeless selected to live here will be hardened criminals.
Everyone is vetted, which means basically we do police checks on everyone that comes in. We will not serve any violent offenders, and we will not serve any lifetime sex registry people.
Some neighborhood residents think it is a positive development.
When I seen it, I think it said on Facebook, and I thought, wow, that is a really good idea. Why didn't somebody think of that sooner?
And you think they're doing a community service?
Oh, yeah.
They expect 50 to 100 applications to live in these homes. They begin accepting those applications October 1st. Move-in is set for November 1st. In Muncie, Derek Thomas, RTV6.
Well, you've heard the phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, Steve Shives knows it's true. He's made a fortune thanks to some old scrap parts from a beat-up bus.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor X shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home.
And she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning.
But that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months. And with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the Tiny Home Nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, well, hold on. Let me see if Reba showed up. All right, Reba, are you there? Your mic is open. Okay, Reba is somewhere, but not currently at the phone, which is okay. So here's what I'm going to do. We got Los Banas, Texas. We have people that have military experience in deployment. We've already got some land. We got at least one tent. So what we're going to do is I'm going to end this program because there's no set time on this. We can go anywhere from 2 minutes to practically 3 hours on this podcast. But we're going to wrap up today. I'll be calling a few people this afternoon. I got to recharge my phone now because I'm running low. So we're going to wrap up for today, and then we're going to pick up from here tomorrow. As we militarize what we want to do. On that note, everyone have a good day.